Welcome to the Obesity Medicine Podcast with your host, Dr. Matea Rentilla, board certified in internal medicine and obesity medicine. Here, we talk about a path to metabolic health, and we have real conversations about chronic weight management and living a full life. Just a reminder, I am a physician, but I'm not your physician. So everything that's on this podcast is for informational purposes, but please go talk to your doctor about what's right for you. There is no medical advice being given on this podcast.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Dr. Young, for coming on. I have followed you on social for a really long time. I have learned so much from you that it was the time when I finally felt the confidence to reach out to you and say, hey, can you come on the podcast? Because we really need to hear a lot of what you have to say. If people are not familiar with who you are, can you tell us just a little bit about what area you practice in, how you help patients?
Sure. First of all, thank you for inviting me. I've been following you too, and I was very excited when you reached out to me. So I'm Melissa Young. I'm a board certified endocrinologist. I do general endocrinology. So I see patients with a multitude of endocrine disorders. I was an employed physician for 8-9 years before I bit the bullet and opened my own practice. So I've been in private practice and for the majority of the time, you know, solo private practice for the last, 14 years now, I guess. I see a variety of patients, most of whom, I guess, just because of how prevalent the disorders are, most of whom have diabetes and thyroid disease.
That's going to be perfect because a lot of what I want to ask you today, I'm going to just ask questions how I see them being asked to me in general from the patient perspective. So let's just jump right in. First, with the thyroid side of things, I know that a lot of people know that if their thyroid functions off, it could lead to some weight gain. Can we just start out with, if someone has concern that their thyroid function might be the cause for their weight, what labs are appropriate for people to get checked?
For the majority of patients, a TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, is the screening test for thyroid disease. I know that there's a lot of chatter outside of the medical community that there are other tests that are important, but the thyroid stimulating hormone is the hormone from the pituitary gland to tell your thyroid to work harder. When the pituitary senses that the thyroid's not working hard enough, then the TSH goes up. Conversely, if the thyroid's working too hard, if it's making extra thyroid hormone, then the TSH goes down. There are some unusual cases where the problem is not the thyroid per se, but the pituitary, in which case the TSH may be normal or low, but the thyroid hormone levels themselves are also low. So if the patient's clinical picture doesn't go along with the patient's TSH, then I also recommend checking a free T4. Now, I know there's, a lot of talk about checking thyroid antibodies and things like that, and those are only helpful to confirm what the cause of the hypothyroidism is. I mean, the most common cause of hypothyroidism, unless you've had your thyroid out, or you had radioactive iodine, or you were born without a thyroid, the overwhelming majority of people will have autoimmune thyroid disease. And checking the antibody just confirms that, but that doesn't help with therapy.
Yeah. Okay, that really clears it up because I know so many people, they're getting strange things checked, like reverse T3. And I'm like, okay, but if that's the only lab that's off, it's just like, it makes absolutely no sense. So I'm glad that you cleared that up. Do you think that, I think it's generally accepted that if someone has a weight challenge, they should have their thyroid function checked, correct?
It's reasonable to check it. I mean, the majority of cases of weight gain are not because of a medical disorder, but it is important to make sure that that is not the case, because if there is something that is treatable, of course, you want to address that.
Yeah. One video you made in the past that I found fascinating, because I didn't know that we had quantified it or had a rough understanding of it. So if someone's thyroid function is low, how much weight gain do you see that they have, or how much they can lose once they get on medication, like a rough ballpark, or what do you see clinically?
Yeah, I think that there's this misunderstanding that hypothyroidism leads to having obesity. The weight gain from hypothyroidism itself is usually somewhere in the realm of 5 to 10 pounds. And so restoring normal thyroid function, and again, this is for patients with relatively, with moderate to severe, patients with a TSH of 5, you know, with normal being 4.5, generally won't have a significant weight gain. But in any case, but restoring thyroid hormone levels to within the normal range will then only lead to, only to maybe 5 or 10 pounds weight loss. So if someone has 60 pounds of excess weight, restoring thyroid function is not going to make them lose 60 pounds.
Yeah. Okay. When you said the only 5-10 pounds, I think collectively everyone is going to, there's a little cry that they're going to experience because everyone wants there to be this answer, right? Like, oh, I get on levothyroxine and then everything's okay. And I never saw that when I was in primary care. I never saw that even when I would catch the TSH would maybe be 7, 8, whatever it would be, they just would come back a few months later, just totally dejected that this big transformation had not occurred. I do hear though, that they feel that it's harder for them to lose weight. Do you hear that clinically in practice?
I hear that from patients. But I think that once someone has been labeled as having hypothyroidism, every woe in their life is because of their hypothyroidism. And unfortunately, a lot of the symptoms of hypothyroidism are very nonspecific and can be caused by a myriad of things. People say they're tired and a lot of people are tired, even when they don't have thyroid disease. And blaming it on their thyroid, I think, is doing an injustice to the rest of their body.
Yeah.
And the same is true for the weight gain. And I tell patients that, I will treat the hypothyroidism. If you want your thyroid hormone levels to be kind of on the higher side of normal, I can accommodate that. We have a little wiggle room, but I don't want you to think that this is going to be the answer to all your prayers. And I've warned them ahead of time that the world may not necessarily be a better place just because your thyroid hormone levels look better.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad you say that because I feel that not only with thyroid challenges, but I find that's with a lot of chronic medical conditions, such as like PCOS, things like that, because it so globally affects the body and the way that people are thinking about themselves, things like that, it becomes a challenge. That actually leads me to my next question, which is I have a lot of women that come to work with me that have a diagnosis of PCOS, and they've had many challenges in life because of it, maybe things like infertility, things like that. But weight in particular, they have a very hard time releasing it. And so I'm wondering, what is your approach for PCOS patients? Do you have anything that you think about differently with them compared to just normal weight management?
Part of it depends on what their most pressing challenge is right now, as far as their symptoms. For some women, their primary concern is that their periods aren't regular. And so if that is their primary concern, then we can put them on birth control pills. For some women, their major concern is excess hair growth or acne, in which case, the birth control pills can help to a certain extent with that, but we may also add spironolactone to that as well. For most of these women, regardless of what their other symptomatology is, because PCOS, it is on that insulin resistance spectrum, I do like to put patients on metformin. And for the viewers, I just want to caveat, there is no FDA-approved medication at all for PCOS. And so we're kind of going around and treating the symptoms as they go. If their primary concern is fertility, then I should refer them to reproductive endo for help with fertility. And then as far as the weight loss is concerned, I basically treat them as I would anyone else who requires weight loss. It's unfortunate, however, that if they have a plan that does not cover weight loss medications, that our options are limited. but there's some weight loss with the metformin, but it's not great. And then there are some, prescription weight loss medications that are relatively inexpensive. But if I wanted to put them on a GLP-1 receptor agonist because we're using it off-label for PCOS, it's hard to get. And if their plan does not cover weight loss treatment, then that's an issue.
It's such a shame because we know that if they can get on a GLP-1, for example, so many of the symptoms that they were having from PCOS. I'm trying to write a letter of medical necessity right now, and I suspect it's going to go nowhere. But just like you still try to fight it. You still try to get it approved. But it's such a shame that we know that these medications are so helpful, yet we can't get the insurance companies to cover it. I know that's it's another matter, but that's good to hear from you that it really matters what they're actually looking for at that moment. That's going to really dictate treatment. Along those lines with the anti-obesity medications, do you find that your diabetic patients have a harder time losing weight? I know we see that in studies, but do you see that also clinically, even if you get them on like a GLP-1?
I think they do have a harder time losing weight than patients who don't have type 2 diabetes, partly because they're on so many other medications usually by the time they get to the GLP-1. Part of it depends too on where they are in their diagnosis. Have they had it for 5 years? Have they had it for 15? But certainly patients who already have consequences of having obesity, I think have a harder time losing the weight. And patients who are otherwise relatively healthy, who just need the weight loss, I think it's easier for them. Plus, I think to a certain extent, because they are healthier, they're able to do more to help themselves. And they're coming primarily just for the weight loss, as opposed to patients who are coming for their type 2 diabetes, who this is just, for many of them, this is just another med for them.
Right, exactly. When you write, like, let's just say specifically for GLP-1s, because we know there's a lot in the weight management area, but let's say for the sub-Q injections, if anyone's listening and not familiar, do you have sort of like things that you recommend that they do when you put them on this medication? Like, I know I have my little spiel of, I want your water, your protein, your movement. Like, I've got my sort of top four things I always go through. Do you have sort of your little like bag of tricks for that as far as what you recommend that they do, and then you see the best results for them?
I mean, as far as helping them with the weight loss when they start on GLP-1?
Yeah.
So I tell them, well, first of all, I warn them about these side effects. And I tell them that it is usually mild and temporary. And if they hang in there, it will usually subside. I tell them that these medications are tools to help them lose weight, but they also need to help themselves by making appropriate choices. Because I've had some patients who just expect the hunger to go away and expect the habits to go away. And so what I tell them is, don't put on your plate what you would normally put on your plate and hope that you'll just stop midway. I said, put half on your plate, finish that. And then when you're done with that, think, well, are you still hungry? And then you can put more on your plate. But if at that point you say, you know what, I really don't need more, it's easier to stop then than to hope that half the plate will just, not be appealing anymore.
Right.
I do agree with you that I tell them about the hydration, make sure that they drink, plenty of water, and that they start their meal with the protein and the non-starchy vegetables. And I tell them they don't have to avoid carbohydrates altogether, but they don't want that to be the majority of their meal. And they don't want to start with that because you don't want to fill up on the carbs and then not get the nutritious food in. So start with the protein and the non-starchy vegetables, and then you can have the carbs either during or after.
Yeah, I really like that. So they know about side effects. You tell them actually how to be successful and not expect this to be, because I experience that with patients too. They think that they're so hopeful that they're going to take this medicine and just everything that they've ever struggled with in that area is gone. What's ironic about it is that a lot of the times it actually does end up working great. And then they mourn the loss of food being this nice thing where they feel better when they eat it, right? Because they're not getting the dopamine hit anymore. So they're wanting to almost still want to do this, but their body's not even allowing it anymore. And so I always say we have a human brain, no matter where we turn, there's going to be a challenge. But I like how you talked about sort of just the psychological aspect of, when you have a smaller plate, less on it, it's easier to stop, right? Versus having a sort of check-in in the middle of something tasting really great.
I want to tell you a story. I was just at a meeting earlier this week. I'm on the advisory board of a fitness and wellness center. And they create programs for people with various chronic medical illnesses. They have a cardiac fitness program, and they have a diabetes fitness program. They have a bariatric surgery fitness program. And one of the members of the team had suggested creating a program for people who are on, he specifically said Ozempic, but people on GLP-1 receptor agonists, because they, quote, cause so much muscle loss. And I, excuse me. So I just want to point out that you can have muscle loss from any rapid weight loss, whether it be, you know, restrictive dieting or bariatric surgery. I said, I just don't want, when you market this program, I don't want people to hear that the GLP-1 receptor agonist causes muscle loss, because that's going to freak people out and make them not want to take it. I mean, at any time, if you're walking around carrying an extra 50 pounds, your muscles will be stronger because you need to carry an extra 50 pounds, right? If you put the 50 pounds down, well, your muscles will not be as strong doing your day-to-day things because you don't have to work as hard. But yeah, when he said that, I'm like, oh no, I can't have this happen.
Right. It's almost like always a way to make the meds look bad because the lack of perspective is there. Like you said, you know, compared to surgery or just weight loss in general. I just had on a few weeks ago, Dr. Ali Novitsky, and she does a lot of body composition testing. She does a lot with the fitness area. And so she really has shown that as long as patients are getting a good amount of protein and even once a week, but more than that, if they can, strength training, that they're able to hold on to a really good percentage of their muscle. And it doesn't need to be what we see sometimes in the studies or just in general. And so I think that the education and how we come at the patients, it's massive. I just had a visit before this and I told the patient, look, when you're going to get enough protein, you're going to hold on to your muscle. It's going to help with satiety. And the patient even told me, I don't feel as hungry. And then I said, and then it also, it has a metabolic effect because you're having to burn more when you burn the protein versus the carb. And so it's like, you're getting so much out of it when you're following something that's going to help support your body, help you to not lose muscle. So I think that how we come at patients, even with programs like this, it's helpful because I think it's much more empowering versus making them scared kind of when we come at that way. Like, here's how to make it work versus we don't want this big muscle loss.
And I think it's important too, when patients start these medications, that they understand that this isn't the only thing they're going to do. They're not just going to take a shot every week and then not do the other healthy things that they should do. Because even for patients who aren't attempting to lose weight, exercise is important, right? We are all supposed to get some cardio and some muscle strengthening exercises. And it is particularly important when you are trying to lose weight and keep the weight off. Because again, whenever you lose weight, you are going to lose some muscle mass along with the fat. And if you don't keep your muscles toned, your metabolic rate will slow. And in order to keep it up and to keep the weight off, it's important. And again, it's important for your cardiovascular health and all of that to have some exercise. But yeah, we just don't want patients to think that I'll do this shot once a week and never have to do any other thing ever again. So I didn't object so much to the program per se, but just the way that he had put it. And I was afraid of that on the marketing material, that's what it was going to say. I'm like, okay.
Like, no. So do you ever see when patients come to you as far as for weight management specifically, are there things that could be, I don't know what I'm asking here, maybe like a primary care doctor that they could be looking for more beforehand or that they could be helping with prior? Do you think that there's any advice that you would have on that front? Because I do think that a lot of primary care doctors, they're actually handling majority of this. And I think probably only specialized cases are actually getting to you. What do you think?
I think that a lot of education is still needed for the medical community. There are still, unfortunately, plenty of people in the medical community who don't see obesity as a chronic medical illness, which is unfortunate. So again, going back to the meeting I was in earlier this week, a physician who's also on the board had said something about willpower. And I'm trying to keep my head from exploding. And someone else had said, well, what happens when they stop these meds?
That's what I was going to ask you about, because I feel like everyone's obsessed with that. And I'm thinking, we don't, for hypertension or anything else, you constantly push that narrative. Yeah.
So that was my answer. I said, so if you have high blood pressure and you stop your blood pressure, measure blood pressure will go up. If you have asthma and you stop your inhaler, you will start wheezing. So absolutely, if you stop taking these medications, you will regain the weight. It's like if you stopped, if you're going to expect them to calories in, calories out, and if they stop that, then wouldn't you expect them to gain the weight also? So I said, it is a chronic medical illness and needs to be thought of as such, but I digress. So going back to the primary care doctors. But I think there is so much education that needs to go out there so that the medical community sees it as a disease that it is and treats it as such. And the concept of calories in, calories out, you know, so many patients say, you know, you're not just in my office, but on social media, you'll hear them say that my doctors don't believe me when I say I try. Oh. And, you know, and it is such a struggle. And I don't expect patients to be perfect. None of us are. And when I hate when they say they cheated on their diet, because that gives it such a moral, connotation. I said, it's not like you're cheating on your spouse. Yeah. You have a piece of cake. That is not a mortal sin.
Yeah.
But there's a, you know, they feel, and probably justifiably so, that their physicians don't believe that they're trying to diet and they're trying to exercise. It is a very difficult thing to do. Changing eating habits that you've had probably since childhood.
Oh yeah.
Is a very difficult thing to change. And even once you've changed that, because once you develop overweight and obesity, all those physical changes that have occurred in your body keep you from being able to lose the weight, even with the best of intentions. There are very few people who have obesity who are able to lose weight and keep it off with just lifestyle modification.
Yeah.
And those people, and even, what was that show years ago?
Oh, the Biggest Loser. Biggest Loser.
Yeah. So, they did great during the show when they had trainers, and all they did all day was lose weight. And then once they stopped, they regained it. And again, you know, people would blame them for not keeping up with the program. But, you know, it's the physiology. Or, you know, once these abnormalities occur in ghrelin and leptin and, you know, all those, you know, the neurologic connections that are made, that is, you can't fight biology.
And I know that, and I forget, of course, the exact numbers right now, but when they looked at years later, they looked at a cohort, they redid their metabolic testing, their basal metabolic rate was hundreds of calories lower compared to other people at that weight. Even though they had regained, they would compare, and they just had permanent damage that was done due to how they had done things. And so it's really fascinating. I remember the other thing too, I've always been fascinated by the show because I just thought it was such a disaster how it went down afterward. But I think there was one person that kept the weight off, and it was someone who became a trainer. For hours a day, they were working out. It's almost like their entire identity became that, right? And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, our identity does change with a chronic illness as we learn to manage it. For me, I feel like I've learned to cook different things and move and, you know, got it. But it's if it has to entirely take over your life, not everyone has that privilege, right? Not everyone can literally change their career to where that's all we're doing. So this is, again, I like what you're saying with primary care, realizing it's a chronic medical condition. Mm-hmm. They need maybe a medication in addition to other things and being open to that, right?
Yes. I've had patients, I get a mixture. I have patients who come to me because all their other doctors told them that they need to be on a weight loss medication. And I'm like, they have licenses. If they thought you should be on it, why didn't they write it? And then there are the other ones who my doctor told me I shouldn't take it because of X, Y, and Z side effects and so on. Or you're only going to be on it, you're going to regain it once you stop it. And I'm like, so, and I said, there's a happy medium in there somewhere.
Yeah. But I really get it because I feel like before I did more training, because I came from a background of only doing primary care and I was internal medicine, did primary care. And then I became more passionate about weight management. So I went on and did obesity medicine boards and learned more. I truly didn't understand that some of these medications can be used long-term. I didn't get it. Like, I literally was stuck. If anyone here is an older physician listening, just the fenbramine 3 months and then you're out. That's what I was used to. So to know that, no, we can use these things long-term and this is what it can look like. And frankly, I didn't have all the other resources. Like, I think probably because you're seeing patients in this area, do you have sort of dieticians you can send them to, or do you have sort of that referral network of what other things can help them? Is that something that you've kind of built out over time to help them?
Oh, I wish. I mean, for my patients who have diabetes, it is much easier because most plans will cover diabetes education. And I do have a diabetes education center across the street from me, so I can send them over there. For patients who I'm treating just for their weight management, well, I usually see them for other endocrine disorders, but then deal with their, there are many plans that don't cover nutritional counseling. And so some of them are able to pay out of pocket, but many don't. And so they kind of rely on what I can tell them and what, you know, and the resources that I send them to online and so on. But it's very difficult because of insurance coverage. And it's not inexpensive. Sometimes they'll go for like one session because they can afford that, but they can't go for follow-up.
This is the reason I built my own clinic, because I was like, I am so sick of, these are the things I think they need to be successful. And it's not one thing. It's not just me, right? I want the dietitian. I want the video thing that I can record. I want this. I want that. I want to bring in these experts. I can't do it in this conventional setting. And I don't know what your scenario was when you decided to finally go on your own, but I just realized I can't fully do everything in the way in which it's done. But I do think that, you know, there are some programs that I know out there. I'm going to give one example. I don't know if you know Corinne Crabtree, No BS Weight Loss, but it's a membership. It's $59 a month. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of the, I'm going to call it the cognitive behavioral work. They do a lot of the mindset things. They have a lot of tools to help them with planning. She has something called the Four Basics. It really works. They support if you have had a surgery or you're on a medication, they don't care about any of that. I find there are things out there like that, but it's a shame that these things are not covered when it is really part of management of a chronic illness. So they're sort of out there in different capacities, but it's like these things are needed sometimes for some people to continue to make success long term.
Absolutely. I think the reason why it's not covered is because people still aren't accepting it as a chronic medical illness. Because why should nutritional counseling be covered for someone with diabetes, but not someone with pre-diabetes? So you got to wait to get diabetes first before you can get nutritional counseling.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, I subscribe to the philosophy that they're more metabolically flexible in that sort of pre-illness phase, or even frankly, like I'd love to not even have any obesity develop, not have pre-diabetes develop, but technically in that pre-diabetic area, I see us being able to get weight off easier, be able to make changes easier. And then, like you said, there, I think there's just so many factors that play into kind of once you already have, let's say type 2 diabetes, it's potentially harder to sort of, I don't want to say reverse, but sort of change the direction of things. Do you have any final words of wisdom that you think you have not shared today that you think would be important for people to know just in any of these areas, whether it's thyroid, PCOS, weight management?
Of course, I think it's very important that patients, you know, find physicians that will work with them. And you can, I mean, there can be a great physician who just isn't right for you. I've had patients tell me, I have doctors that I know that other patients rave about, and a patient will come in and say they don't like them. They, whatever. I said, well, it's like two people are dating, or whatever. Yeah. Two people meet. You can be two wonderful people and just shouldn't be married. Right. Totally. And that doesn't mean you should never marry anybody. You just need to find a different spouse. So it's kind of like that. So patients need to find a physician that will work with them. I also want to caution them about certain clinics that I think are taking advantage of people's frustration. There are a lot of quote unquote wellness clinics out there that are making promises and selling supplements and using certain medications inappropriately. And that is also true for some of the online clinics. I'm very concerned when someone's never laid eyes on you and doesn't know your history and is willing to prescribe you something. So find a real life doctor who's willing to work with you.
Definitely. Oh, that's so good that you said that. But both points, because I do agree. I think personalities have got to mesh. I always say the therapeutic relationship. If you don't like how a doctor's talking to you, you know that feeling inside. I always describe it as like that gut reaction where it's just sort of, excuse my language, it's a hell no. It's just like, no, I'm not going to go back to that person. I don't like the energy that's coming out of them. I don't want them to guide me, let alone to see them again. You maybe even want to cry before you go back. Not your person, right? So let's go find another doctor. It's not doctor shopping. It's finding someone I know when I was in primary care, sometimes people would have seen two or three people before me before they were like, oh, thank you. This is who I've been looking for, right? So that might take some time. And I agree. I think it scares me, clinics that they'll have just questionnaires and they've never actually talked to someone. Often when patients fill things out, they don't know the intention behind the question. So I think they might say no and not realize that it actually is a yes for them. So no one's actually clarifying and going through it. So thank you. Those are such good points. Can you tell people, how can they find you on social? Because I know that they're going to want to learn more from you and be in your world.
So I am a TikTok creator and my handle is MAD, it's M-A-D underscore endo, E-N-D-O. So they can find me there. Most of my videos are educational. Some of them are sassy. It's like, I can do a video on hypothyroidism and 500 people will view it. If I do my dramatic readings of prior authorizations, 3,000 people will watch that one.
I love them. I love all of it. I'm there for every single video. I want to put a plug that people go follow you. We're going to make sure to put it down in the show notes because first of all, I learned from you, but also I'm not going to lie. I like the sassy readings because I feel the pain. All right. Well, thank you so much. I've learned so much and I know everybody's going to love hearing this interview.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.